I'm Dr. Robert Mather, and I am the conservative social psychologist. Welcome to my podcast. My podcasts are available exclusively at theconservativesocialpsychologist.com. Today is May 30th, 2020. Today on the agenda, we're going to talk a little bit about Trump's Twitter executive order and a little bit about COVID psychology. And so let's start with Twitter and social media. So President Trump had an executive order recently where he's discussing social media sites. The idea is that if they censor speech, they'd lose their liability protections and be treated like a publisher. That's not particularly a bad idea. Social media platforms evolve over time, and if they want to take on censorship and changing and modifying people's speech or identifying it in different ways, then that really is a publishing platform and really deserves to be treated as such. It was funny because as I went to pull up some of the articles I'd read recently for that on my iPhone, iPhone Safari, it pulled up only New York Times and CNN articles that I had not read whenever I was searching for it. I had to work really hard to find some of the articles that I had found and some of the more conservative-leaning outlets that I've looked for. Other platforms over the years that have been known to censor conservative speech. YouTube is one that's been notorious for that. Facebook news feeds as well. My news feed is interesting. It's hard-pressed for me to find Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh or Fox News or any other conservative articles from those websites that pop up that are liked on my feed. And it was interesting because when they started receiving a lot of blowback several months ago, I think it was back maybe in December or November of last year, suddenly they started popping up in my feed again for a while, and then all of a sudden they vanished again. And when they modified their algorithms back and forth, right, so they modified it once so conservative ones don't show up in people's feeds, even when those are the things that they have indicated that they like. And then once they modified it, suddenly they popped up for a little while, and then after a few months, that went away, as did BBC and CBS News and all the other news in my feed. So they seem to have changed to where now they just wipe it all away. And I don't know how that eventually will play out, but they are certainly changing the algorithms on Facebook. And so, you know, and this also leads me to another point as to why I have my blog on my website, which is different from my Psychology Today blog. My Psychology Today articles go through an editorial process, and so it takes a little longer. Anytime I write anything about President Trump or politics, it takes longer to get editorial approval for those, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But on my website, I don't have to adhere to that. I can get things up faster and things that perhaps my audience would prefer to read over something that the Psychology Today editors might shut down. To their credit, the Psychology Today authors, or not authors, editors, have let me publish very freely with the things they do. They make changes. They force me into some things that I end up doing, but they're great to work with. They've been fantastic for me. The podcast. My podcast is not available on other platforms like Apple or Google Podcasts or Anchor or any of the others. And the reason for that is that I want to control my information. I want to control what I put out to people. I don't want it edited. I don't want people inserting advertisements for things. I don't want people taking sound bites of it and playing it out of context. It's all my website is the unvarnished way to receive my message. And that's one of the wonderful things about the internet is that we have those options at our disposal. It was one of the things that made YouTube great for a long time. And it's one of the things that drew people into social media is that everybody had a voice. For me, I'm not interested in filtering voices. I would like to hear more people's unfiltered voices, polite, right, and professionally professional demeanors in the way that they talk to each other in civil discourse. But it's not something that, you know, the people run a democracy, right? People are in charge of the democracy. The citizens are in charge. Everybody answers to us. And our voice should be heard. And I'm very glad that we live in a country that doesn't regulate the internet that way. The FCC doesn't regulate podcasts, so I can say whatever I want here as long as if I label it explicit, then I can say whatever I want to say. I don't really speak in explicit terms, so it's not really a problem for me. But anyway, so it's interesting that Trump brought that publishing element up to the table as far as social media goes. And it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Of course, the next president could just undo the whole thing too. But hopefully it forces some of the social media platforms to reevaluate kind of what it is that they stand for and what they're doing. Another thing I'm going to talk about today is kind of COVID psychology. And so in my home state of Oklahoma, and we're moving into phase three of our reopening on June 1st. And so that's just, that's Monday. And so more things are going to open up. We've had lots of openings that did not affect the death rate or the infection rate. We've been on a steady downtrend for those things. The active cases in Tulsa and Oklahoma counties, which have the largest urban populations and has had the largest number of cases, The active cases in Tulsa and Oklahoma County are less than 0.03% of their populations, and that's after the first two phases of reopening. So Oklahoma is in a pretty good position as far as reopening. I also want to talk a little bit about, respond to some of my listeners. So I have listeners that contact me periodically from my podcast and ask questions and discuss things. And so I'm not going to identify people, but I'll mention like what state they're from. And so I have a listener from Oklahoma who was asking questions about, you know, how does this COVID pandemic affect younger kids and teens and parents and grandparents, right? And is this all sustainable in a way that we can balance our risks and also the psychological factors that are involved in this? It's really tough on younger kids who don't understand things. That my daughter has constantly asked questions and asked why she can't see her friends, and you're left trying to figure out which friends are okay seeing other friends and that type of thing. Teenagers, it's difficult for teens, right? We know the effects for all the way across the age group of loneliness, for one, is very important. We know the effects of loneliness. We know the importance of social connection and, you know, doing it through Zoom meetings, doing it through Zoom calls with classes, doing it through FaceTime, play dates, things like that, has its limits. And so it's, and another part of it is it's not, it may be self-imposed in a lot of cases, right? But it doesn't feel self-imposed because the world is kind of bringing us to the circumstances where we're having to do this. It's one of the things I talked about in one of the earlier podcasts where we went through the psychological research on what happens during a quarantine. And one of the big ones was loneliness. And one of the big things to try to combat that was to create a sense of altruism, that you're doing something important to help others. And of course, you see lots of commercials and things on television, which lead to that sense of community that we're all in this together. But it's also alienated a large group of the population, which leads me to my next comment from a listener in Florida. I'm going to paraphrase, but it's hard to believe the data because of political agendas that drive that. It feels like we're divided between mask wearers and non-mask wearers. It's divided the United States. This particular listener's kids are back in some activities and some of the challenges that are presented of homeschooling while working. That's definitely very similar to my take on things. It's the political agendas are driving a large part of this narrative, and it's forcing the group polarization that we've seen, and I've discussed in other podcasts and articles, the group polarization between liberals and conservatives. It's forcing that polarization even wider. So there's a much larger gap now that we're seeing. And we're divided between mask wearers and non-mask wearers is really what it is starting to turn out to be. The reason for that is that with any type of group polarization scenario, the people with the agendas are the ones that are speaking the loudest. And in an election year with a pandemic right now, the way things are going, the people with agendas are speaking absolutely the loudest. So that's just my advice is to hang in there and to do your thing and do what's best for your family. In our case, we're cautious with all of our activities. We're cautious with the things we do. We wear masks when we're out at stores. We wear masks, and we don't really go a whole lot of places. I don't feel like anybody's forcing me to wear a mask at this point. If a business wants me to wear a mask when I go in to enter the business, or a school wants me to wear a mask, then I'll wear a mask. But I'm also wearing masks in other scenarios where nobody's telling me I have to, because that's me trying to do what's best, not just for other people, but my family too, right? I don't want to bring anything home to my family or my loved ones. In my extended family, there's lots of people who are vulnerable, and it's rough watching how lonely they can get as they're very isolated. A listener from Arizona sent me a video to watch, and in the video there was heartbreaking footage from France of these kids in little boxes that are chalked out on their playgrounds, and they're spaced out way apart, and they don't get to play with each other or do anything. They just get to get outside and be in each other's presence, you know, 20 feet apart from each other. And that's really sad. Societies are locking people up with COVID into nursing homes and sentencing people to die in that way. And they're isolating innocent children who rarely contract or carry coronavirus based on the data. So we might want to rethink that. Now, kids are resilient, but we don't want to take advantage of that fact and push them too far. So in conclusion, I'd like to say that, you know, social media is changing. Unvarnished opinion is healthy. Free speech is healthy, except for hate speech, which pretty much sucks. I'll leave it up to the lawyers to sort that one out. Don't go overboard with your coronavirus precautions, but don't be dumb either. Wearing a mask is a very simple, easy thing to do. But you don't need to wear one when you're driving all by yourself or when you're out walking the dog or out on a jog. So you know, use common sense for when a mask is appropriate and when it's not. Listen to my podcast exclusively at theconservativesocialpsychologist.com.